Recruiting. He was old. He was ill. And nobody in the world needed him. In the matter of poverty, Vasily Ivanovich had reached the point where a man no longer asks himself on what he will live tomorrow, but merely wonders what he had lived on the day before. In the way of private attachments, nothing on this earth meant much to him apart from his illness. His elder, unmarried sister, with whom he had migrated from Russia to Berlin in the 1920s, had died 10 years ago. He no longer missed her, having got used instead to a void shaped in her image. That day, however, in the tram, as he was returning from the Russian cemetery where he had attended Professor D's funeral, he pondered with sterile dismay the state of abandon into which her grave had fallen. The paint of the cross had peeled here and there. The name was barely distinguishable from the linden's shade that glided across it, erasing it. Professor D's funeral was attended by a dozen or so resigned old émigrés, linked up by death's shame and its vulgar equality. They stood, as happens in such cases, both singly and together, in a kind of grief-stricken expectation, while the humble ritual, punctuated by the secular stir of the boughs overhead, ran its course. The sun's heat was unbearable, especially on an empty stomach. Yet, for the sake of decency, he had worn an overcoat to conceal the meek disgrace of his suit. And even though he had known Professor D rather well, and tried to hold squarely and firmly before his mind's eye the kindly image of the deceased, in this warm, joyous July wind, which was already rippling and curling it, and tearing it out of his grasp, his thoughts nevertheless kept slipping off into that corner of his memory where, with her unalterable habits, his sister was matter-of-factly returning from the dead, heavy and corpulent like him, with spectacles of identical prescription on her quite masculine, massive, red, seemingly varnished nose, and dressed in a gray jacket such as Russian ladies active in social politics wear to this day. A splendid, splendid soul, living at first sight, wisely, ably, and briskly, but, strangely enough, revealing wonderful vistas of melancholy, which only he noticed, and for which, in the final analysis, he loved her as much as he did. In the impersonal Berlin crush of the tram, there was another old refugee staying around to the very last, a non-practicing lawyer, who was also returning from the cemetery, and was also of little use to anyone except me. Vasily Ivanovich, who knew him only slightly, tried to decide whether or not to start a conversation with him, if the shifting jumble of the tram's contents happened to unite them. The other, meanwhile, remained glued to the window, observing the evolutions of the streets with an ironic expression on his badly neglected face. Finally, and that was the very moment I caught, after which I never let the recruit out of my sight, V.I. got off. And since he was heavy and clumsy, the conductor helped him clamber down onto the oblong stone island of the stop. Once on the ground, he accepted from above, with unhurried gratitude, his own arm, which the conductor had still been holding by the sleeve. Then he slowly shifted his feet, turned, and looking warily around, made for the asphalt, with the intention of crossing the perilous street toward a public garden. He crossed safely. A little while ago, in the churchyard, when the tremulous old priest proposed, according to the ritual, that the choir sing to the eternal memory of the deceased, it took V.I. such a long time and such effort to kneel that the singing was over by the time his knees communicated with the ground, whereupon he could not rise again. Old Tichotsky helped him up as the tram conductor had just helped him down. These twin impressions increased a sense of unusual fatigue, which, no doubt, already smacked of the ultimate glebe. It was pleasant in its own way, and having decided that in any case it was still too early to head for the apartment of the good, dull people who boarded him, V.I. pointed out a bench to himself with his cane, and slowly, not yielding to the force of gravity until the last instant, finally sat down in surrender. I would like to understand, though, whence comes this happiness, This swell of happiness that immediately transforms one's soul into something immense, transparent, and precious. After all, just think. Here is a sick old man with the mark of death already on him. He has lost all his loved ones. His wife, who, when they were still in Russia, left him for Dr. Malinovsky, the well-known reactionary. The newspaper where V.I. had worked. His reader, friend and namesake, dear Vasily Ivanovich Mahler, tortured to death by the Reds in the Civil War years. His brother, who died of cancer in Harbin. And his sister. Once again he thought with dismay about the blurred cross of her grave, which was already creeping over into nature's camp. It must have been 7 years or so since he had stopped taking care of it and let it go free. With striking vividness, V.I. suddenly pictured a man his sister had once loved, the only man she had ever loved, a Garshin-like character, a half-mad, consumptive, fascinating man with a coal-black beard and gypsy eyes, who unexpectedly shot himself because of another woman. That blood on his dickie, those small feet and smart shoes. Then, with no connection at all, he saw his sister as a schoolgirl, with her new little head, shorn after she had had typhoid fever, explaining to him, as they sat on the ottoman, a complex system of tactile perception she had evolved, so that her life turned into a constant preoccupation with maintaining a mysterious equilibrium between objects. Touch a wall in passing, a gliding stroke with the left palm, then the right, as if immersing one's hands in the sensation of the object, so that they be clean, at peace with the world, and reflected in it. Subsequently, she was interested mainly in feminist questions, organized women's pharmacies of some kind or other, and had an insane terror of ghosts because, as she said, she did not believe in God. Thus, having lost this sister, whom he had loved with special tenderness for the tears she shed at night, back from the cemetery, where the ridiculous rigmarole with spadefuls of earth had revived those recollections. Heavy, feeble and awkward to such an extent that he could not get up off his knees or descend from the platform of the tram. The charitable conductor had to stoop with downstretched hands, and one of the other passengers helped too, I think. Tired, lonely, fat, ashamed, with all the nuances of old-fashioned modesty, of his mended linen, his decaying trousers, his whole unkempt, unloved, shabbily furnished corpulence, V.I. nevertheless found himself filled with an almost indecent kind of joy of unknown origin, which, more than once in the course of his long and rather arduous life, had surprised him by its sudden onset. He sat quite still, his hands resting, with only an occasional spreading out of the fingers, on the crook of his cane, and his broad thighs parted so that the rounded base of his belly, framed in the opening of his unbuttoned overcoat, reposed on the edge of the bench. Bees were ministering to the blooming linden tree overhead. From its dense, festive foliage floated a clouded, melious aroma, while underneath, in its shadow, along the sidewalk, lay the bright yellow debris of lime flowers, resembling ground-up horse dung. A wet red hose lay across the entire lawn of the center of the small public garden, and a little way off, radiant water gushed from it, with a ghostly iridescence in the aura of its spray. Between some hawthorn bushes and a chalet-style public toilet, a dove-gray street was visible. There, a Morris pillar covered with posters stood like a fat harlequin, and tram after tram passed with a clatter and whine. This little street garden, these roses, this greenery, he had seen them 1,000 times in all their uncomplicated transformations, yet it all sparkled through and through with vitality, novelty, participation in one's destiny, whenever he and I experienced such fits of happiness. A man with the local Russian newspaper sat down on the same dark blue, sun-warmed, hospitable, indifferent bench. It is difficult for me to describe this man. Then again, It would be useless, since a self-portrait is seldom successful, because of a certain tension that always remains in the expression of the eyes, the hypnotic spell of the indispensable mirror. Why did I decide that the man next to whom I had sat down was named Vasily Ivanovich? Well, because that blend of name and patronymic is like an armchair, and he was broad and soft, with a large, cozy face, and sat, with his hands resting on his cane, comfortably and motionlessly. Only the pupils of his eyes shifted to and fro, behind their lenses, from a cloud traveling in one direction to a truck traveling in the other, or from a female sparrow feeding her fledgling on the gravel to the intermittent, jerky motion of a little wooden automobile, pulled on a string by a child who had forgotten all about it. There! It fell on its side, but nevertheless kept progressing. Professor D's obituary occupied a prominent place in the paper, and that is how, in my hurry to give V.I.'s morning some sort of setting as gloomy and typical as possible, I happened to arrange for him that trip to the funeral, even though the paper said there would be a special announcement of the date. But, I repeat, I was in a hurry, and I did wish he had really been to the cemetery, for he was exactly the type you see at Russian ceremonies abroad, standing to one side, as it were, but emphasizing by this the habitual nature of his presence. And since something about the soft features of his full, clean-shaven face reminded me of a Moscow socio-political lady named Anna Aksakov, whom I remembered since childhood, she was a distant relative of mine. Almost inadvertently, but already with irrepressible detail, I made her his sister. And it all happened with vertiginous speed, because at all costs I had to have somebody like him for an episode in a novel with which I have been struggling for more than 2 years. What did I care if this fat old gentleman, whom I first saw being lowered from the tram, and who was now sitting beside me, was perhaps not Russian at all? I was so pleased with him. He was so capacious. By an odd combination of emotions, I felt I was infecting that stranger with the blazing creative happiness that sends a chill over an artist's skin. I wished that, despite his age, his indigence, the tumor in his stomach, V.I. might share the terrible power of my bliss, redeeming its unlawfulness with his complicity, so that it would cease being a unique sensation, a most rare variety of madness, a monstrous sunbow spanning my whole inner being, and be accessible to two people at least, becoming their topic of conversation, and thus acquiring rights to routine existence, of which my wild, savage, stifling happiness is otherwise deprived. Vasily Ivanovich, I persisted in this appellation, took off his black fedora, as if not in order to refresh his head, but with the precise intention of greeting my thoughts. He slowly stroked the crown of his head. The shadows of the linden leaves passed across the veins of his large hand and fell anew on his grayish hair. Just as slowly he turned his head toward me, glanced at my émigré paper, at my face which was made up to look like that of a reader, turned away majestically, and put his hat on again. But he was already mine. Presently, with an effort, he got up, straightened, transferred his cane from one hand to the other, took a short, tentative step, and then calmly moved off forever, if I am not mistaken. Yet he carried off with him, like the plague, an extraordinary disease, for he was sacramentally bound to me, being doomed to appear for a moment in the far end of a certain chapter, at the turning of a certain sentence. My representative, the man with the Russian newspaper, was now alone on the bench, and, as he had moved over into the shade where V.I. had just been sitting, the same cool linden pattern that had anointed his predecessor now rippled across his forehead.